Hello and welcome to Gaps in the Dial, a podcast series consisting of selected stories about pirate radio pioneers in London. It's commissioned by the Barbican as part of their Rebel Radio season, which is an exploration and celebration of pirate radio in London. My name is Tayo Papula. I'm a DJ, audio producer and presenter. Radio is a passion of mine and so is music. I grew up glued to the radio and it's the sounds I heard on pirate radio as a teenager that ignited my passion for music. Collecting it, selling it in record shops, playing it in clubs across the world, making programs about it and talking about it on the radio. Coming up soon. So sit back, press play and record on your cassette deck and enjoy.
So stay tuned. Stay tuned. Even if you hear silence. BBC. Oh yeah, we want you, y'all. And we need you, y'all. BBC. Oh yeah, we want you, y'all. And we need you, y'all. You take up your radio sometimes, it give you what you want sometimes. But only on a Friday on your radio, you tune into this yeah show, BBC.
Hi, I'm Charlie Night Doctor.
And I'm Mike the Bike, Mike Williams. Well, we're standing in the top end of Portobello Road, just beyond the flyover, right outside 286 Portobello Road, which was the home of Better Badges, and also DBC, we also held our post box here. And really, the station started inside that building.
The Dread Broadcasting Corporation. A sharp brand, an even sharper name, and a home for black music on the pirate airwaves. In fact, the station lays claim to being the very first black-owned radio in the UK.
We've been in the same place nearly 50 years now, so 76 I've moved there, just before all this started, the DBC and Better Badges. And my kitchen was HQ for a good few years while it was being established. So every morning there'd be Mike and Lepke sitting in my kitchen scheming the next move.
Lepke was Leroy Anderson, the founder of Dread Broadcasting Corporation. You'll be hearing a lot more about him.
Over the road, on the corner, we set a studio up in there for a carnival transmission. The studio had relays, and we broadcast links between the stage, which is just down there, out to the world.
I'm in Notting Hill on Portobello Road. Just by the flyover where I used to rave hard every carnival when I was younger, to Westwood under the Westway. I'm with Mike Williams, who ran the station with the founder, Lepke. He's with his friend Charlie, an integral member of the station and a member of the 70s UK reggae band, the Night Doctors.
Lepke used to set up a stall every Saturday and would sell cassettes, T-shirts. T-shirts were a big seller. And also he'd have DJs out on the street on four or five maybe sometimes, and get a bit of a crowd going in front of the shop.
So this whole area, this little block was
full of history for DBC, this little section of Portobello Road for sure.
And we set up, before DBC actually started, Lepke had a sound system he set up outside Honest John's when he was working there, and it was fantastic. And he was taking Super 8 film of people. And there was one point when the police made everyone shut down, he would carry on very quietly and just slowly increase the volume. And he had one instance where there was a line of policemen all with their thumbs under their pockets on their coats, and they were bouncing up and down to the music. It was magical.
Mike and Charlie carry on their tour of the local area, pointing out a spot where a few local heroes have been honoured as murals.
Did you see when you came up on the canopy round the market now, there's a few characters, one of them being Lepke.
Because Leroy Anderson was a local hero, a West London radio pioneer who helped put his area and his people on the map. This is a story about the Dread Broadcasting Corporation, told by people who were there. Tune in if you're ranking.
Friday night over London, people preparing themselves for this station.
Lepke was cool. Lepke was just vibes. You know, the whole thing back in those days was about connection.
That's chef and TV presenter Andy Oliver, who was a resident of Ladbroke Grove around the mid-80s.
You either liked people or you didn't like people. There wasn't really a kind of overt notion of what one should do or what one shouldn't do. At least I didn't recognise that in my life anyway. You just either liked people, you didn't like people. And Lepke was a little bit older than us and he spoke quite quietly and he just had a way of like appearing at your shoulder. Like you'd be there, he'd turn around Lepke and he'd be like, right? He just would appear out of the blue. And also he was the ranking Miss P's brother. And Miss P was like, she was just everything to us. I was like, oh my God, regular. If Miss P said, Margaret, if Miss P said hi to you in the street, you felt blessed. Those guys were Grove born and bred. And we kind of came in later, younger and a little bit excited and kind of from the punk scene. But they were really at where the apex, where punk and reggae and culture and all of those things, ska and everything, connected and met. And really at the heart of DBC was that energy. That's what made DBC very special, actually, because it really reflected Grove culture from that time, in that moment. And that culture was an extraordinary culture. You had lords and ladies and people who were, you know, the dustbin collectors, all hanging out together in all the pubs, like genuinely that's not even an exaggeration. Genuinely, all of those people and everything in between, all piling on top of each other to do whatever they wanted and create whatever they wanted out of whatever they wanted with whomsoever they wanted to do it with. So DBC not only reflected the sound system culture, it reflected our day-to-day life. It was for us, by us, in its most original outing.
Joey was always on the radar of DBC. I think it was him that told me about it. He brought it to my attention. You know, his ears were always on the ground whenever there was any sort of movement, you know, in black reggae circles. Yeah, Joe was always on point.
West London and Norman J, MBE, who was turned onto the station by his reggae-loving brother Joey J, remembers the importance of DBC and its place in the local community.
Lepke and DBC was really important because the only time they really surfaced or come on my radar was, you know, the week before Carnival. Everyone's got a red, green and gold T-shirt, DBC.
Hi, I'm Piers Easton. I was a pirate radio engineer from the late 70s through to the late 80s.
Piers Easton was the premier transmitter builder for many of London's pirate radio stations. The kind of radio geek genius you need to get yourself on the air and, crucially, to stay on the air.
I wanted to be a pirate radio person myself. I wanted to be the DJ, not the engineer, but I've ended up being the engineer. It feels like I've known Leroy forever, Lepke. I'm trying to remember how I actually met him. We just hit it off. And, you know, I think he and I had a very mischievous spirit, I'd like to think. He just surrounded himself with very interesting people. I remember going around to this flat he had in Easton, a little tiny flat upstairs. And I walked up and I heard this voice and smelt this smell, very strong smell of something in it that was being smoked. And there was Lee Scratch Perry sat on Lepke's sofa dictating a letter to the Pope because he was on his way to Rome. I mean, you could not make that up.
I was one of the early, not the original, but one of the early DJs on Dread Broadcast Corporation. This would have been first couple of years of the 80s. I'd say like 81, 82, beginning of 83.
Lloyd Bradley is an author and music and culture historian. He had a show on DBC in what he himself describes as the second phase of the station's lifespan.
There was a lot of us buying those records. There was a lot of us grooving to those records, lots of loving them. Nothing on the radio, you know? Leroy, he recognised this. I knew him through working in a record shop. He worked in Honest John's, the record shop in Portobello Road, that's now in Portobello Road, had a shop in Goldbourne Road They were the first shop to start selling punk and reggae in the same thing, and a lot of the punks used to buy their reggae in there. They opened a specialist reggae shop in Soho called Maroon's Tunes. Leroy worked for them. That's where I met him, you know? He saw, and I thought this was something that everybody I knew was aware of, almost subconsciously, right? That black music in London, anyway, didn't differentiate. We liked music. I had some African music. I had some soul and funk. I had a lot of reggae, you know. And there was more than one sort of black music. And Leroy's vision with DBC, although it started off as a reggae station because that was his, I say, weapon of choice, if you like, right? He wanted to expand it. Yes.
Prince Allah there. Thing called Lady Deceiver. That's up on Free on the Freedom Sounds label. We're going to change things a little bit now. Time for some Love Is Rock.
The radio coverage of reggae music was very minimal in those days. There was only really the Tony Williams, David Rodigan Sunday show, which was for 2 hours, I think. It was just 2 hours. And then David Rodigan left and got a job at Capitol.
Cause something kind of feel the same with a donkey jawbone. Got you little ready gun, come fi mash it and go home. Capitol Radio Stereo 194. Murder!
Well, I want you to listen to this running song and tell me how much version you think. Let me show you how.
Version.
If you were putting out music in those times, getting airplay, which is essential for sales, was actually nigh on impossible to get. So that was one of the first priorities of DBC, was to give airtime to people producing music.
Lepke, real name Leroy Anderson, was the son of Rita Marley. He'd spent much of his time in New York and was heavily influenced by the radio stations there, listening to a programme in Spanish here or a music show straight out of Harlem further up the dial. Another huge influence was a show running fresh out of Jamaica on the JBC by a DJ and producer called Mike Campbell, a.k.a. Mikey Dread, a.k.a. the Dread at the Control.
Trumpet sound and angels sing, glad tidings of great joy I bring to you and all mankind. Dread at the Control.
Mike Williams explains the original DJ lineup.
Well, the original lineup format of DBC was a 6-hour pre-recorded show. I mean, each DJ recorded their slot onto a cassette. And he used to start off with Chucky, who was a club DJ, and he used to be given the task of playing new releases and sort of softer reggae, tea time show.
Watcha, and in case you never know, the Euro has got a new album on its way, and I'm going to run you a track from it. It's out on Pre. If you're lucky, you might hold a copy.
And then it would go into Dr. Martin and Smiley. They'd do a Jump Up Rhythm and Blues show, which was very short, but very good. Miss P would do a show, which was something for the girls, yeah.
Listen to DBC.
Oh no, before that we'd have a funk show, which was Dark Star and Lady Di. And Dark Star, right, we'll expose him now, is Lloyd Bradley.
He asked me if I wanted to do a show, so yeah, why not? I mean, the great thing about it was it wasn't totally transactional. It wasn't that thing where a lot of the later pirates, for instance, right, would... Essentially, they go on a pirate show, a pirate station, to publicise their raves. I'm not saying they don't do good shows, but that's the kind of thinking behind it. I don't think any of us did anything like that, you know. It was just, I did it because I thought it was a good idea and it was kind of something Londoners needed.
Minibus driver, Dub. From the Voice of Progress. 7-inch on Firehouse Records. And I'd just like to take this musical break to tell you you're in tune to the Rankin Miss P. AM. DBC.
Margaret, the Rankin Miss P, who was Leroy's sister, it was a kind of late night reggae show. She was brilliant. She was lovely. I was so pleased when the BBC decided to pick her up. And the great thing was she was, you know, she was a bit of a star, actually, the Rankin Miss P, when she was on the BBC. And she never changed at all. She was absolutely wonderful. They were just lovely people.
The Rankin Miss P was a massive part of my radio upbringing too. A bit later than this, mind. Like many on DBC and pirate radio in general, they continue to influence for generations to come. About 10 years later, especially on this teenager in South London.
Yeah, so at the time that I met Miss P, when we were just starting, she was at Teachers Training College. She's a very clever lady. And she had two small children. And she got nagged into doing a show by Lepke. And Dr. Watt built her a home studio. So she was able to be at home with her children and do her shows, and they were fantastic. We had a friend who, Gustada Africa, and he presented a really fantastic African music show. And then after that, it was Dr. Watt, who used to play Revive music before having a Revive music show was the fashion. You know, he would play oldies, real oldies, and in his own inimitable style. He had a home studio with echo and everything, so it was a good show. Dr. Watt stepped away. He went back to work. And then Clive, Papa C, took over his slot.
Got to be in tune to the right frequency. Proper station called DBC, in tune to the brother called Papa C. Here to make you feel airy. Boss it, Papa T. Boy, 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 boy.
You know, at times you may be enjoying the cool, and at times you may be feeling sick. Then the end you need is the medicine that is out of here.
So that was the format. So people used to know roughly what time to tune in, because we were quite accurate at starting at 6 on the dot. The whole point of the station was it was to play black music of multi-genres, and then it would go into Lepke.
Tradition. Them style, Sally Groove. Tribute to a King from the album Spirits of Ecstasy, brand new.
And then, of course, Lepke's show, which was completely wild, self-produced show with, you know, duck calls and space echo. And he was, you know, he spent, I think he used to do it on a Thursday night, and he would spend all night doing it. Mikey Dredd's Dredd at the Control shows, which were on, I think it was 3 cassettes. They were highly sought after. They still are. I wish I had mine. But then when you listen to them, he hardly spoke on the shows. It was, you know, he played music and interlinked it with a few jingles, but he hardly spoke. He wasn't a presenter, but Lepke was very intent on having people present in their own natural voices.
This was the important thing. I mean, this is how Leroy started the thing off, really. It was to kind of duplicate as authentically as possible a sound system atmosphere on the airwaves. You know, we weren't presenters. There was a bunch of pirate stations around at the same time, this is early 80s, right, who mostly seemed to be sort of suburban South London based, right, and they were essentially full of presenters who wanted to be Robbie Vincent. And Leroy, and so many of us coming from sound system backgrounds, we knew it had to be a bit chaotic, it had to be this bunged on top of that. It wasn't about people, you know, announcing records and that in between and whatever. It was like playing a sound system for an hour, you know, and with the sound effects and this sort of stuff all brought in, you know. We tried to create that kind of, it's not quite chaos, but it's controlled chaos, if you like.
The station also hosted guest shows from some global superstars who just happened to live locally.
Joe Strummer. Lepke was good friends with Joe Strummer from this area. Paul Simnon used to live in Cambridge Gardens as well. So they were great supporters. They actually financially supported us at one time. And they did their fantastic radio show, which people have misconstrued it as being, you know, DBC show. It wasn't. They did it themselves. Time before we had our own transmitter, we used to use a transmitter that was open access, and the deal was you picked the transmitter up from the people who had it, you were responsible for it until you returned it, and we turned Joe Strummer onto that.
Dread Broadcasting Corporation also gave a radio debut to a young Nena C, as she was known then, and her best pal, Andy Oliver.
They were fantastic. We knew them, and it was a nebulous connection because I'd been on the road with Nena when the Slits were on tour. I was on tour with the Slits, Creation Rebel, and Don Cherry, and she was with her stepdad, Don Cherry. Anyhow, she and Andy Oliver became sisters in crime, so to speak. Naughty but nice. And they did a couple of funk shows and they didn't need any instruction what to do. They just came into our studio in Kilburn, 1, 2, 3, 4, and off they went. And they were kick-ass, real kick-ass. You know? And Andy to this day is still kick-ass.
We were quite naughty, generally, you know, but it wasn't like a hat we put on. We were just that we were awake, so we were naughty. Do you know what I mean? We were literally teenagers. Nana was 17, I was 18. You know, we were actual teenagers still growing, really. And we were excited about everything all the time and a little bit tipsy most of the time. I've got to say, to be honest, to be fair, Red Stripe was our beverage of choice. I remember Nana called me, or I called her, or I went round there, something, and she said, Lepke wants us to do a show. And I was like, oh, fun. And at the time, Nana and Bruce, Nana's then husband, were going to New York and coming back with all these amazing mixtapes from, like, WBLS, all black. And so we had all these, like, little cuts and offcuts all the time of like tunes that had just come out. Bruce would go to New York and come back with like white label, amazing shit all the time. And remember, hip hop was being born.
So what we tried to do was present a spectrum of black music for essentially for black Londoners, for all of us, you know? And because he knew that I knew soul and funk, I knew how to do it, knew how it fitted into a reggae world, knew how the pieces of the jigsaw slotted together, if you like. That if you can create something like that on the radio, I mean, what he did straight away was with the T-shirts and the Funky Dread stuff, right, is everybody can take part in it. It's like you might be too young. You know, you're 13 years old, you can't go to a sound system, but you can listen to DBC. You know, and so that was the idea, that we could build a community through the airwaves. I mean, the weird thing about being on the radio is you have no idea who's listening or who they are and how many of them there are, you know. But Leroy's dedicated in this. He, quite visionary, in as much as, because this was the old days and we didn't have a sort of a live studio with a link and all of that, all our programmes were pre-recorded on cassette, and we had to go up to the top of the tower blocks in Shepherd's Bush and put the tape, change the tape on the cassette, you know, on the roof. And but because of that, he exported them, if you like. You know, they became a very valuable thing, like mixtapes were tapes of DBC shows. So Leroy would send tapes abroad and had deals with shops abroad that would sell them, and we'd duplicate the tapes. And it was all about spreading the word, you know. He worked at it tirelessly. And because of that, I have kind of nothing but admiration for him.
How far did the station reach? We can't be sure. Lloyd Bradley talks of the station being picked up by friends of his outside London in Reading, but not being able to get it himself in Kentish Town, North London. The reach and the enduring legacy of this station came down to the brilliant, recognisable branding, something Mike Williams is very proud of.
First of all, we had a very strong image. The graphic image, which was created by Megan Green, who is a friend of ours, work of genius because it's still highly sought after now. But we had a strong image. I mean, the pirate radio stations at the time, other ones, they were all aspiring soul stations and with, you know, smashy and nicey type attitudes, you know what I mean? And they didn't have any image, whereas we had image. And it was also picked up upon by the music press. So a lot was written about us, in Sounds and NME. So people from all over the country were well aware of what DBC was about. The branding, the actual design, was I had bought back from France. There was a label in France called Jarliv, which had the dreadhead, but the other way round. And I bought back copies of that and some other bits and pieces, and I gave it to Megan Green, and she just knocked it up. Yeah, and it's, you know, 50 odd years later, or nearly 50 years later, it's still, you know, a very powerful image. It'll never be beaten. In fact, we used to have a collection of pictures of people wearing it. I think one of the Neville brothers wore it on stage one time. I think Ronnie Wood had one and wore it one time. So it was that type of, it's like the reggae version of the Ramones t-shirt.
Something that has always made pirate radio special for me is the quality of the adverts and also the jingles. Another enduring part of the DBC legacy were those incredible, unique dub plate specials.
DBC has no beginning, DBC has no end. And when you tune in, you gotta tell your friend. On Friday night, the start of the weekend.
Lepke used to produce a lot of jingles, and he used to have a home studio. And the manufacturing of the jingles was... I sat in on a few of them, it was a complete laugh when Devon and Miss P got together. God, they were just a barrel of laughs because they just didn't take it seriously. And he'd be like the producer, come on now, come on, concentrate, concentrate, and all that. But our jingles were... The Prince Lincoln one was a mind blower.
On Friday night, the start of the weekend.
The first time I heard it, it was a scorching hot day. Lepke, Dr. Watt and myself went around to Miss P's. We went into her music room. She went and got a cold drink, put it on the table, and she said, help yourself. Switched on her open reel tape, and out came this song. And he was one of the most beautiful people you could wish to meet, Prince Lincoln. And Lepke chopped it up into making it into jingles, but it was a song of praise for DBC.
You don't know how glad I am.
And he never asked for a penny or anything. And the same with the fantastic Michael Prophet jingle. He made that out of love and respect for the station.
First of all, it's DIY culture. No one else is going to do it, so I'm going to do it myself. You know, like blues dance culture or independent record distribution culture or any of that, you know, right? Well, yeah, we'll find a way to do it, you know. And the other thing that I loved about Leroy was if I don't do it, probably no one will. And he would take responsibility for it. People responded to his taking responsibility. You know, like I say, none of us made any money out of DBC, but we all did it, you know. He was an absolutely lovely guy. And what was so lovely about him was the work rate he'd put in to doing what he did. It's like what I try and do with my books was reconnect the music with the culture that created it acknowledge black music from a black perspective, which was a little bit of everything, you know. The idea that it all came together and it should all be on the same station. We were a black music station. We weren't a soul station or a reggae station. We were a black music station. And he was determined to sort of create the best experience he could for his listeners.
And so many years later, how does Mike Williams look back on that special time?
Well, I take great pride in it now. I mean, it's... I tried to explain to some people what we were doing and they just find it incredible. But it, as I said, it was different times. You know, today people are spoilt with, you know, cable television, internet radio stations, blah, blah, blah. You know, so you can Spotify and all this sort of nonsense. You know, you can get anything you want, the touch of a button on a computer. But in those days, it was very difficult to get the information and entertainment. I don't know how many years ago it was, I gave a copy of the CD to someone I know who was like a sister-in-law of someone I know. And she said, oh, my husband and I, we used to listen to that religiously every Friday. I went, what? Yeah, it was fantastic. We just switched the radio on and that was it. We were entertained for 6 hours. So I know that we had a profound effect upon the music industry. And the music industry loved us.
It was what we wanted. It wasn't someone else's idea of what we wanted. The radio shows on DBC weren't the product of, like, a series of marketing meetings. Even if it didn't make sense to the mainstream, it made sense to us, and thus we supported it.
I loved those years. And it's kind of sad that it didn't really grow fully, but it was fantastic. It was a real achievement. And Lepke should be really proud, who from years later in bands I've been in, and I tell them, yeah, I was part of the DBC scene that was going on. And they go, really? Wow. I used to listen to them. It was a good little thing to be involved with. Fantastic, in fact.
If you hear silence, don't fret. Sister Miss P coming up. Tune into Solid Groove Selection next week.
When it comes to loving, she knows how to do a thing, yeah. When it comes to peace, she knows how to...
Thanks for listening to Gaps in the Dial. If you've enjoyed this episode, and I hope you have, there's another 5 available for you to check out. Gaps in the Dial is written, produced and presented by me, Taya Papula. It's a Furious Styles production, commissioned by the Barbican as part of their Rebel Radio season, with thanks to Rich Attlee, Charlie Fracture and Jesse Howard. Special thanks also to the interviewees for sharing their time and their tales and for letting me tell some stories.
So stay tuned. Even if you hear silence.